Hello and welcome back to the Rested Culture Show. I'm your host, Frank Ebersold, and we do have Curtis here with us again today.
Yes, Curtis is here.
Curtis is in the house. And we've got a lot to talk about, and one of the first things I just want to touch on is some of the current news and things that are happening on the news today. This Saudi anti-corruption drive, my gosh, this is quite an amazing thing here. And this is where the Mohammed bin Salman is behind the throne here of King Salman of Saudi Arabia. And in this drive, he's locked up 200 of his closest family and the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh. And the thing that makes this just mind-blowing here is that this hotel basically brands itself as a retreat for those who simply desire the royal treatment. And man, are these guys getting it now. There's
Is blood thicker than water?
Well, I just don't know that, you know, here you've got a luxury hotel and they say that, I don't know how many rooms they've got, but they say that 500 people at this present time are booked into the hotel, including the 200 that are being tortured, slapped, insulted, and being hung upside down to break them down. So do you have families in that mix too? Do you have like a family that, you know, just popped in for a weekend of fun? And, next door they hear screaming and slapping. And supposedly, Blackwater...
Did Trump stay there on his visit to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, it makes you really wonder what's going on. And let's look at it this way. You know, I wonder how this is going to affect that hotel's business. Are we going to see these 200 royals sit down and say, I am so pissed off. Wait till I write my TripAdvisor review. Is this going to affect their TripAdvisor rating? I mean, what's going to happen? I'm just waiting for that Roach Motel review from one of these royals that says, we check in, but we cannot check out. You know, this is bad news for the hotel. It's literally become the Roach Motel for Saudi royals. They check in, but they can't check out. Mm. Just wait for those reviews. That's next. But, one of the big things that's going on today is this talk just briefly about this tax cut that's coming along. And, they're trying to jam this thing through. They're really pushing hard, and you've heard our commentary on it. You know where I stand. It's one of those things that we do have to resist against. You've got to push back on this because not only is there's two phases to this. The first phase, as we know, is what you hear on TV with Trump saying that this is going to be a Christmas present for the middle class. And quite frankly, it is. If this is a Christmas present, you know what? I don't even want the package. I don't want anything to do with it because the reality is it's actually giving more money, in fact, $1.4 trillion to companies, rich big companies, and the top 1%. So this is helping them out. I mean, this is all just shrouded in just deceit, I think. I mean, it's the whole intent of this bill is designed to help the middle, not help the middle class. It's going to help the rich and the big corporations. And, this is a true tragedy. So that's the first phase, is this tax cut literally for the rich. And it's been shown that the middle class simply won't benefit from it. So the first push is obviously to get that done. The second phase is going to be the deficit that it creates in our government. And that vacuum is going to lead to cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And that's phase two, folks. And
those are automatic cuts.
They are.
It's legislated. It's law. It has to happen.
That's exactly right. And these cuts, there's a law that we referred to last episode called PAYGO. And it's called Pay As You Go. And this will trigger automatic spending cuts based on the gaping hole that this so-called tax cut is going to leave in our budget deficit. And so to counteract that, there's going to be cuts in, massive cuts in spending. And this is phase two. And if we get this tax cut, so-called tax cut, again, just for the rich and the big companies, if that gets passed, the phase two of it is going to be absolutely brutal to the middle class. And again, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. These are programs that, you know, really perform the safety net for the older and the disabled. And we as Americans can't let this bill pass. You need to get on the phone and talk to your congressperson, your senator, and, you know, start jerking their chain on this, because if it does go through, the cuts are going to be amazing. And let's face it, at this time, with the stock market setting new highs, the amount of wealth that's created just from that market setting new highs is purely amazing. And that's a reflection of how, you know, how good these companies are doing right now, how good the environment is. Is this even the right environment to talk about tax cuts? I mean, it's mind-boggling. And the amount that the rich is going to benefit, is this the time to even give them more? I mean, just think of this in terms of the social consequences. I mean, if we're going to empower the 1% even further, you know, beyond what the stock market's already doing in this environment, is that socially responsible?
It just gives the American oligarchs more power.
Right.
More power to keep their thumb on the rest of America.
That's exactly what happens. And
how is this going to trickle down to us?
It never does.
Will it trickle down to us?
Well, it never does. And that's how they try to sell this whole thing. And today, there's something that we all need to watch out for that's coming out. It's going to be a nonpartisan joint committee on taxation. And this, again, it's nonpartisan. They plan to release a final estimate, if you will, of the Senate bills, tax bills' impact on the debt as early as tonight, Wednesday night. So the interesting thing about this, and going back to what you just said, is that the dynamic score that's going to be coming out today supposedly takes into effect factors like the family and the business taking that savings, supposed savings, and spending or saving or reinvesting the money. So that's the trickle-down effect, and they're going to try to account for that in today's report. So it's going to be interesting to see what that is. But I can tell you it's not going to be pretty. It's scary that this thing is moving as quickly as it is. And what they're trying to do, obviously, is not give people a chance to resist it. And, you know, folks, that's where you come in. You've got to let your congressperson know how you feel about this. And I don't mind tax reform, but it's got to be done right. And it's got to be done in a way, obviously, that enriches the middle class if they're going to enrich the top 1%. It just can't be one-sided. So one of the things I wanted to talk about today, as you know, we just had that horrific ISIS attack in Egypt where 300 were killed. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is I'd like to just touch on why it happened, how it happened, and then the usual Trump pivot at the end of this event that we always see every time something like this happens that's terrorist-based throughout the world. So the first thing, why did it happen? Well, you've got Muslims that are killing Muslims, and, you know, that's mind-boggling. When I first heard the report, I'm like, what gives here? I mean, why are Muslims killing other Muslims? There must be a reason for it. And in looking at this, what's happening evidently is that the attack was based on Sufi Islam. And I hope I'm saying that right, but Sufi Islam is a mystical branch that includes saints and shrines. So it's still Islamic, obviously, but they include this mystical branch of saints and shrines. And the ISIS group, evidently, the Salafi Islams, are very ultra-conservative, and they do not approve of these saints and shrines. So that's the reason for the attack. I mean, it's just what they do with religion to me is that, you know, this weaponization of religion is has been a problem ever since man has been walking upright.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just I believe in religion, you know, as we've talked about. I strongly believe in that, and I think there certainly is a place for it. And you know, you do have to have that moral compass, but when you weaponize it, you know, folks, this is exactly what can happen, the weaponization of religion. And we're seeing this to a lesser extent in the United States in various pockets. You look at Judge Roy Moore, very effective, again, at weaponizing religion, you know, to the point where he stood up yesterday and said that, you know, the moral breakdown is not what I did, but the interpretation and the media trying to come at me. You know, he says, I didn't do anything, first of all, which I don't believe. I think that's a lie. But his weaponization of religion is saying that the moral problem is with the media saying these things about me. You know, after these ladies have come forward who are entirely credible.
Trying to twist the truth.
Trying to twist the truth. That's exactly what
is
they do.
Is it morally okay to approach a 14-year-old?
No.
To want to date a 14-year-old? To sexually abuse?
It's mind-boggling. And then how do people...
That's pedophilia.
It is. And, I mean, how do these people in Alabama, how does the governor, Kay Ivey, I mean, how does she say, I support Judge Roy Moore? So, you know, the weaponization of religion happens on a lot of different levels. And, but back to this thing here, you know, this event that was in Egypt, you know, the other part of this whole equation is that the people in Egypt must have known something about this. There had to have been someone outside of the ISIS group, I think, that would have known about this. So why don't the people come forward? You know, if that were here, I would expect, you know, Republican or Democrat or somebody, if they see something, you know, like that happening, and they do. I mean, we in America, we generally come out and we will tell the authorities because we have that trust, don't we? I mean...
Yes, absolutely.
We have the trust in our military. We have the trust in our police.
And we don't fear retaliation.
Right, we don't fear retaliation. Now, I must say that
For the most part, but sometimes, you know, it does happen.
Yes.
But I would say, for the most part, Americans, you know, if you see something that you think is going to be detrimental to a group, an individual, you report it to the police.
Right, and that's not happening there. And the reason for it, there's several things that are going on there. ISIS intimidates people. They've become so ingrained into the population that they're able to intimidate. And what they do is they kidnap, they'll behead somebody, they'll dump the body in the streets, and that's the kind of signal that they send. So Egypt is really, you know, sort of losing the battle in this fight against ISIS. And one of the other things that's happening is that the people in Egypt, they don't have a fear, or they do have a fear of the government. They have a fear of the police. They've got a fear of the military there. And there's a lack of trust entirely between the people and their police force and the military. You know, they're heavy-handed. There's claims of excessive use of force by the military. There's deficiencies in due process in Egypt. There's suppression of civil liberties. And in fact, as evidence of that, just the other day, yesterday, they just jailed 16 people for homosexuality, even as it is not illegal. So, you know, how do you trust a government with this kind of thing going on? So they don't get it. And the thing that's amazing about it is that they poured tons of money into their military. In fact, in 2015, Egypt bought $5.3 billion of U.S. military equipment and arms in 2015. And not only that, but just last year, people don't know this, but just last year, Egypt purchased $23 million of rocket-propelled grenades and small arms from North Korea. Isn't that amazing?
Hmm.
So here they are, you know, supposedly an ally of the United States, and they're going out. And last year, we've got all these sanctions, right, against North Korea trying to tighten the noose, and they bought $23 million of rocket-propelled grenades from North Korea.
And what are they going to do with rocket-propelled grenades in Egypt?
Yeah, and help me understand, Donald Trump, you know.
Yeah,
help me understand, how does this happen, and what are the effect? How effective are your sanctions? I mean, come on, This is a joke. And what are they going to do with them? Yeah, they're going to use those.
Well, they're going to
supposedly
Sudan help the situation in Sudan. I don't think so.
No, and what's happening is all this military might, and they've got billions of it, but it's, you know, the response is always fire and fury, even in the aftermath of this event, Trump said that they need to defeat them militarily, which kind of doesn't get the fact that there's endemic problems with Egypt and the way they treat their people and the lack of trust there that will preclude them, I think, from winning this battle in the long term. You just can't put tanks and rocket-propelled grenades in the streets and expect to, you know, conquer ISIS. The whole dynamic of what they're trying to do is flawed. And it's, you know, that lack of trust in the people has created a vacuum that ISIS is very shrewd. And they've wedged in there and they're taking advantage of this this vacuum that's been created. Mm-hmm. And this approach that they think they could just throw all the military at it, which, by the way, I kind of fear is our same approach over here. You know, this fire and fury response to North Korea. You know, we'll take care of it. Trump just said this morning, if they launch a nuclear ICBM, we'll take care of it. What does that mean? I mean, come on. I mean, can you give me a little substance on that? We'll take care of it. It's insane. But he's got the same approach, you know, which I'm saying, folks, is sort of problematic in fighting ISIS. The problem isn't necessarily solved with that kind of approach. But, you know, the other thing that happens here, you know, with the events like this, when you see a terrorist event like this, there is the typical and predictable pivot that happens by Donald Trump, and he pivots into something here that I'm going to describe to you next. So that's my event, the take on the event that happened in Egypt and why ISIS is so successful in doing things like killing 300 people in a mosque in Egypt. So here comes the pivot. Trump tweets on November 24th at 10:30 a.m. He tweets, "Horrible and cowardly terrorist attacked on innocent, defensive worshipers in Egypt. The world cannot tolerate terrorism. We must defeat them militarily and discredit their extremist ideology." So that was on the 24th at 10:30. And, you know, as I mentioned, the problem here is that Egypt has been trying to, they've been trying these military solutions forever against ISIS, and it just simply isn't working. Despite all of the weaponry that they've bought, the $5.3 billion, the $23 million last year from North Korea, it just isn't working. And, I mean, in fact, it's a joke that, you know, the supposed sanctions that we have against North Korea obviously aren't working either. But more military is not going to solve the ISIS problem in Egypt, folks. Building more trust in Egypt's military and police with the people and encouraging a tip system from their people will save more lives in this fight than all the military that we can sell them. So immediately after that first tweet, 2 hours after that tweet, Trump scratches his head and he says, "He says, oh my gosh, I forgot to leverage this terrorist attack to promote my wall and travel ban." So less than 3 hours after that first tweet, Trump then tweets, "Need the wall, need the ban. Oh, and God bless the people of Egypt, who are 90% Islam." Isn't that a joke? I mean, he's just sort of, and I say sort of, I mean, he is out of touch. I mean, their God and Trump's God and my God do not play golf together. I mean, it's insanity here that we're dealing with.
He has fostered that idea.
He has. You know, this is, there's so many levels. You know, when I sit down to do this program, there's so many levels that make my blood boil about Donald Trump. It's like, I don't even know where to begin sometimes.
Well, it's because our president is all over the place. He will go from, in one day he can talk about ISIS, and in the next moment he's talking about, he's threatening the North Koreans with it.
It's like a ping pong ball, you know, bouncing all over the damn place.
Yeah.
You don't know where it's going to end up, if it's even on the table.
Yeah, you just don't know.
It's just, it's unpredictable.
And in the same day, he'll mention something about crooked Hillary.
Oh, God. He just can't give it up. And you know what? I'm going to be shouting, lock him up.
Yeah.
Pretty soon here. When this investigation wraps up, I am going to be out there leading the charge with my damn pitchforks, shouting, lock him up. Just like he did to Hillary.
Yeah.
Just the same. So, you know what? It works both ways. Donald.
Yeah.
You just hang in there. Lock him up is going to be the next chant. But, you know, instead of thinking it's always a military fire and fury response, you know, that's what we always get. That's the canned response to this. There's always that pivot to key themes of building a border wall and also a travel ban. You know, basically, most of, and the travel ban is basically against most, if not all, Muslims. You know, I'm starting to think that Trump is starting to tip his hand in terms of, there was a tweet that he sent out just the other day that basically is really showing his, that how he feels against, it's basically all Muslims. I mean, it's, we're not just talking about the bad ones here. You know, I think he's really against all Muslims, which to me is a problem because all Muslims are not the problem. I mean, we know this. Everybody knows this except Donald Trump, for the most part, and the folks that read Breitbart News. Let me add that in. My God, what a toilet bowl that thing is. But, you know, I'm not being politically correct here by saying that, you know, that kind of thinking is crap. Right. And I'm going to talk, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, too. I go out to Breitbart, and I'm just, there's some things that I'm going to throw out here just that I read in the past couple of days. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. But, you know, the thinking that Trump says that we need to ban all Muslims, and he whips up all of this hatred, you know, and fear, basically, against, you know, what they, these people will do to you. I'm not trying to be politically correct here by saying that kind of thinking is crap, you know, whipping up the fear. I'm simply saying that it doesn't address what really is going on with what happened in Egypt. None of it does. You know, take, for example, I don't know if you've, many of you probably have heard of this, but my my nemesis, conservative talking head out in San Francisco, is Michael Savage. Oh, my God. Michael Savage. I don't know if you've heard of Michael, but I would not encourage you to listen to him. Old Michael Savage. Now, he's got a new book out, and he's basically weaponizing his version of religion against Muslims, saying what Trump believes, but Trump obviously won't say. Michael Savage will say that. And just this past Saturday, a day after the Egypt terrorist attack on a mosque, I want you to listen to what my good old buddy Mike Savage had to say about that.
Unless there is a spiritual revival, this country will be overtaken by Islam.
Ignition sequence start.
They're not coming here to assimilate, especially those coming from throwback nations, living in the 9th century, bringing their women and wearing costumes from the Middle Ages. It's crazy. How can this end good for Western civilization?
You know, that's how Savage and Trump take a terrorist attack by extremist Muslims, and then they leverage that into whipping up all sorts of fear. I mean, that's basically what they're doing, folks, is they're taking that event. And it's always that typical pivot into, I need the travel ban, I need to build the wall, and then the fear that they try to whip up. That is always the response. That's always the pivot every time that you see something like this take place. And a fear of all Muslims by invoking the themes of a holy war, basically, like Michael Savage was just talking about, and you know, a so-called Christian revival, which is basically a holy war, is what he's talking about, against what will otherwise be a takeover of America by Islams if we don't invoke this holy war. And what they're doing is they're trying to reinforce that whole keep them out theme by saying when they do come in, the evidence that they want to take us over is that they wear their garb, you know, from the Middle Ages. I mean, what kind of America is this? I mean, that's kind of like, you know, the Indians, you know, back in the days, you know, the missionaries would come in and say, oh my gosh, you can't wear that. You've got to wear proper clothes here. Come on down to, you know, our store here and we'll get you, you know, suited up with some starch collars and all. I mean, who cares what they wear, really? I mean, this is America, right?
Absolutely.
But Michael Savage cares. And according to him, that is part of the reason why they're not assimilating is because they choose to, you know, wear, their women choose to wear what they supposedly wore in the Middle Ages. Who cares? I mean, for God's sakes. But that's the fear factor, folks. I mean, you got to be tuned into it. That's what they're doing. And I, again, I'm not being politically correct here by disagreeing. I'm just telling you that the way we take people, new arrivals, and the way that we vet these new arrivals, it is thorough. In some cases, it takes over a year. And to take that vetting process that, you know, we can improve it, obviously. I mean, a year is a long time. And I think they've done a great job at vetting people. And it's just not an open sieve, is my point. But to take that fear that they're going to overrun us and then suggest, watch out, these folks are going to take over you, America, unless you have a holy war or some sort of spiritual revival against them, it's just pure crap.
What kind of person thinks like that?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, what kind of person, you know, whips that fear up?
What logic is being used?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, what they're doing, Michael Savage caters to a very, you know, conserve population. You know, I call them the conserves, extremely conservative, you know, right wing. And he's got a listener base that basically that's how he makes money. Mm-hmm. Is catering to that listening base. So that's where, I mean, it's sort of the motive here, I think, in his case, is money. I mean, so by catering to that listening base, he's enriching his pocket. And at the same time, he's whipping up all this fear and, you know, getting people just really upset and, you know, trying to paint the picture that, you know, anybody coming into America, especially if they're Muslim, you know, is a terrorist. I mean, we've never had that thinking in the history of America, and it's sad to see it happening today. You know, and again, folks, that's why I don't trust that our leadership is competent.
And all of that is unconstitutional.
It is. And the judges have fought that travel ban on numerous times. Thank God, you know, we do have that firewall of the judicial branch that prevents those things, you know, from just coming out of Trump's tweets and actually being put in practice. You know, thank God we've got that judicial firewall in place. But, you know, that's why I don't trust our leadership is competent. They don't even understand the issue in Egypt. The response to that is always militarily fire and fury, then whip up fear in America to gain traction for the wall and the travel ban. And if we don't get smarter about how ISIS is winning in places like Egypt, then we are doomed. Because ISIS knows that if they can win in Egypt and they can hurt Egypt that way, then they ultimately affect the world order, which is a problem. If something like Egypt were to drop, you know, they've affected the world order, which is what they're doing. And I'm saying that the approach that we're currently in obviously isn't correct. I mean, the fear factor isn't the way to address this problem. And that's what ISIS has taken advantage of. So we've got to get smarter, folks. We've got to get, quite honestly, you know, I just don't think that Trump is cut out for it. Big talk isn't always smart talk. And that's the problem. Well, I want you to stay right there. We've got something called we're going to make an abrupt change here. We've got something called the Dynasty Report coming right up. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back. So this is the Dynasty Report, as I like to call it. This is where we discuss the slightly less political nature of the dynasty. And the first thing that I'd like to talk about here is that Ivanka is in India starting her trip. She's there right now. She started her trip in Hyderabad, India, for what many say is her most important appearance on the global stage. It's a 3-day trip, and the event is the Global Entrepreneurial Summit, organized by the U.S. government, if you can believe that. That's interesting. This is the first time the event is being held in Asia. And Ivanka is going to share the stage with India's defense minister, along with many other business leaders. Ivanka will also be a part of a dinner gala with India's prime minister, Modi. I hope I'm saying that right. An interesting twist here is that Rex Tillerson, our U.S. Secretary of State, has declined to send a high-level diplomatic team along with Ivanka Trump. Maybe because nobody has left in the State Department since they have resigned. I'm not sure. But Don Jr. is also going to be in India to help launch two branded tower projects in Kolkata and Gurkha. And folks, this fuzzy blend of the dynasty mixing business and politics continues, doesn't it? It just, it's endless. And if there was ever a wall that was built between politics and family business like we thought, it's quite a flimsy wall, isn't it? It's rickety, and as Don Jr.'s calendar is full of GOP fundraisers and dinners and Trump-style rallies planned for Indiana, Texas, and Montana, it kind of looks like the family business is politics. Sadly, I really think, folks, that this dynasty is turning into a political dingleberry here. I think that they're going to have their heads and their claws in this political game here for a long time into the future. I even see him seeking office at some point coming up here, God help us. And Don Jr., talking about him, he's going to be at a $200 a head fundraiser in Kansas in the coming weeks for GOP gubernatorial candidate Kris Kobach, who, by the way, is a a big mouthpiece for the president's voter fraud, unproven hysteria. You remember all of that.
Voter fraud in Kansas?
Well, he was a big mouthpiece for, you know, like, you know, the voter fraud here. Even though, you know, as we all know, Trump won the electoral vote, people like Kobach said that there was voter fraud in the popular vote. Well, there wasn't. We know that. It was basically a minority that put Trump in office, but Kobach was one of the ones that led that charge, you know, for voter fraud. But we're going to...
Anti-M.
Oh, God. It just doesn't end with these people. And we're going to put little Donnie on our radar for resistance as he continues to mix politics and business. And, you know, in my view here, little Donnie is campaigning with the alt-right. He's camping out with these guys. He's a big fan of Breitbart. I guarantee you that little Donnie is going to try to push the dynasty into politics going forward. They really feel entitled to the office, actually, you know, which just is mind-boggling. And moving on now to Ivanka and Jared, they're as we know, they're more moderate politically, and it's rumored that they've been nudged by Daddy Trump to go back to New York. Have you heard that story?
They've been
nudged by Daddy Trump to go back to New York. They currently reside in Washington, and they've sort of countered the flow here recently of Daddy Trump in two ways. First, Jared's trip to Saudi Arabia in October, where he met with the Saudi crown prince, and more recently, Ivanka's comments, I don't know if you heard this, about Judge Roy Moore, where she intonated that there's a special place in hell for people like Roy Moore. Well, good for her. But you know what? Daddy Trump doesn't like it, and he's evidently trying to convince her that, you know, baby, you're getting killed here. You should go back to New York. So it doesn't sound like they're willing to do that, but they've sort of, you know, the sunlight is sort of fading on Jared in their popularity.
Yes.
So we'll watch that as a part of our dynasty report. And
maybe they've been having dinner with the Obamas.
Oh, God, wouldn't that just seal their fate? Oh, Lord.
They only live a couple blocks from one another.
I wonder how that would work out. And, you know, that comment that Ivanka made about Judge Roy Moore, just getting back to that guy, you know, if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you just know that I think he's a boil on the butt of the GOP. He really is. And by the way, Republicans, they're not going to be comfortable until he's gone. I mean, they just want this guy gone. But Trump is so afraid of losing the Senate seat to a Democrat that even a guy like Roy Moore, where nine women have come forward claiming he preyed on them as teenagers, one who was a child at 14 at the time, even with all of that, it's according to Trump, it's more important to have this senator in the U.S. Senate, no matter what the cost. And, I mean, that is just, it's incredibly wrong on so many levels. And I think we both can agree that, you know, with this whole thing that's sweeping the nation, if these allegations are true, and I'm just not talking, I think Al Franken, the fanny pincher, I don't know if he should leave. If that's not good, you know, fanny pension, nobody wants that, right? I mean, if Franken's pinching fannies at the state fair, you know, I'm not saying that's a good thing. That's definitely not good. And we encourage him not to pinch any more fannies. But But the reality here, folks, is that you got to look at what the, you know, the event is. Should Franken leave for that? No, I don't think so. Should he, you know, he's apologized and all that, but there is a difference. Now you take somebody like John Conyers and these allegations that are coming out, it's a shame. What, 88
yeah,
years old?
A little, yeah.
And it's getting extreme. And folks, if these allegations are true, you know, I think he should step aside. But this idea of taking somebody like Roy Moore and not putting that kind of logic in place, just wanting that senator, you know, Trump wants him at no matter the cost. And to me, there's sort of a moral breakdown here where, yeah, I get the fact that you need somebody in the Senate that's a Republican, but you know, good Lord, I mean, you've got to have some sort of moral compass here. I mean, you do.
Well, I mean, you look at, with the election of Donald Trump, I think that moral compass was in question a year ago.
And it's broken. I mean, if it was ever there.
So,
I mean,
well,
he's,
where did we go from
oh, God,
at this point?
And just this week, now we're hearing Trump say that, you know, the Access Hollywood tapes, they could be fake. I'm like, oh, God, come on. I don't. This is just gone over
the
edge.
Where do the lies stop?
Yeah.
With him, where do they stop?
And you know,
he admitted it.
The delicate balance between the evangelicals and Donald Trump. You know, I believe that they're trying to swallow a bitter pill with Donald Trump. You know, and the fact that we're going to look by that they believe in, you know.
Well, in redemption.
They believe in redemption, but folks, that only goes so far. And I mean, that's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's the pill that keeps paying you back. I don't see how they can be, you know, so in favor of Trump as this unfolds. I mean, here's Roy Moore with these distinctive allegations that I believe, and it doesn't matter what he does, Trump still wants him in office. And I can tell you, I'm never going to stop fighting the fact that this is the, if he gets elected, I'm never going to stop fighting the fact that this is the new face of the Republican Party. This Roy Moore character, a favorite of the alt-right Steve Bannon fungus. And it only goes away like any fungus when it sees the light of day. And I will hammer this man every chance I get as the new face of the GOP if he gets elected, folks. It's just never going to end. Roy Moore, in my opinion, will be the new face of the GOP if he gets elected. And just switching gears, did you hear, by the way, that Ivanka is promoting a new decorating centerpiece. Did you hear anything about that?
I have not.
Well, this centerpiece is like no other, and you know, it's a giant sea clam. It's a giant sea clam that evidently she's saying is all the rage in decorating now. Never mind the fact that these things are endangered. You know, a giant sea clam. Everybody needs a giant sea clam on their table for a centerpiece. I mean, the disconnect. It's not being politically correct. It's just wrong, folks. You know what I mean? That thinking, it's endemic. This is part of the problem with that dynasty, you know, is their thinking in terms of stuff like that. Don Jr., big game hunting. They don't get it. I mean, the world...
It's being out of touch with the world.
It is. The world is not your oyster.
Own little bubble.
They are. And it's just... I mean, look beyond the rhetoric, look beyond what they say, and I always say, don't listen to what they say, look at what they do. I mean, this thinking is endemic, and it's why we're getting the presidency that we're getting. And this is coming from the kids. And, you know, since we're talking, I'm just going to throw this out there, since we're still talking about the dynasty here, do you know what Donald Trump's favorite foods are? You'll never guess.
Tell me. Sitting here with bated breath.
Well, he loves steak, evidently well done. And, I mean, God, I love steaks. He loves Doritos, evidently. Mm. I love Doritos. Mm-hmm. He loves chocolate cake. I love chocolate cake. He loves KFC, and I do too. And I just had to stop there. I couldn't look at anymore because I was getting troubled. And I'm thinking, how can we enjoy so many of the same foods, yet be such opposites politically? I mean, it was starting to trouble me. I think it was the stuff that I might be having nightmares about. You know, it was starting to... It's just... Oh, God. But, you know, when you look at that dynasty, did you see And we're going to talk just a second about the real dynasty. Did you see in the UK that Prince Harry is engaged to American Meghan Markle?
Yes, I
did. For a wedding next year? Isn't that amazing? Good for him. And evidently, they're also both planning on staying in Prince Harry's little bachelor cottage, also known as Nottingham Cottage, which is where they're both going to reside. And I'm just, you know, you can say what you want about the royals over there, but oh my gosh, when you compare that dynasty to the one that we've got, it just makes ours look flimsy and sort of like a little cardboard cutout, you know. It's like, you know, that's the real gold fixture dynasty. And over here we've got, you know, where they just paint it with a gold paint, you know. And that's exactly what Trump, I'm going to go on a little bit of a loop here, but that's exactly what Trump did when he was trying to sell some property that he bought in Palm Beach. I think it was 512 South County Road. Do you remember that? Where he went to an auction and he paid, God, I forget what it was that he paid for the property, but he bought this. And then, by the way, he sold it to a Russian fertilizer oligarch for like $90 million. I think he paid $40. Don't quote me on that, but he sold it for $90 to this Russian fertilizer oligarch.
Was this before or after his trip to Russia a few years back?
I think it was after his trip, but it was, I believe, before, obviously, his foray into politics. Mm-hmm. But the thing that made me laugh about that story, folks, and you'll get a kick out of this, is one of the realtors in Palm Beach, and yeah, they're a little bit of a spicy bunch over there. They're walking around the house, and Donald Trump is waving his arms, and over here we have my, you know, beautiful paintings, and look at what they've done. And I've seen pictures of the place, and it's horrid. It's horrific. I mean, his design sense is absolutely abysmal. He had a room with disparate pictures of old and paintings of old and new that obviously didn't go well together. I mean, it was abysmal. It was a hack job, if I ever saw one. But they were walking through one of the bathrooms, and he's talking about his gold-plated fixtures. Well, one of the realtors, as Donald Trump walks away, reaches over and scratches the faucet, and he's like, it's painted. Jeez. That's the dynasty that we've got here, folks. It's painted gold. It's not the real thing. But in the UK, they've got the real thing. And evidently, going back to the UK here, they've got new rules on succession that came out in 2015 that allow members of the royal family to marry a Roman Catholic and even one who's a divorcee like Meghan Markle. And they're going to refer to Meghan as Her Royal Highness, but she's not able to be a princess since she's not of royal blood. But still, good for them. And, you know, I just let's kind of wrap up the dynasty program.
We wish them the best.
Yeah, we do wish them the best. My gosh, it's just refreshing, you know, to see this. So let's just ask this one question. Is there any one good thing the king of chaos, Donald Trump, did this week? I mean, can you think of anything? Anything that he's done? Let's think real hard. Let's think. Can you think of anything? While we're thinking about it here, I'm going to take a sip of coffee. Yeah, we're going to think for a second. Hang right in there, folks. Well, we don't have anything. And Curtis, you've been thinking about this for a few days.
I have been thinking about it since we last had a conversation a few days ago.
And there's nothing. We got nothing. I can't think of anything good that Trump has done this week either. But I can think of two things that he did that were very, very strange. And this is going to touch on some of the things that happened.
Well, that's nothing new.
Right. I know. It's sad. Like I said, there's so much to talk about here. The first thing that he did that was very strange was installing Mick Mulvaney as the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And this is when the charter specifically calls for an orderly succession from within the CFPB until a replacement director can be appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And, you know, as the judge ruled, and the judge, by the way, that ruled in favor of Trump, the federal judge was just put in place by Trump in September.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that just sweet?
Just wonderful.
You know, it's folks, we're just starting to rot from the inside out here, you know, from the highest levels. Here's what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau did without any help from Republicans, I might add. No help from them. Since its funding in 2011, the CFPB has handled over 650,000 complaints. And the actions on those complaints have provided $12 billion in compensation to consumers, like people like you and me, Americans, who were victims of deceptive and fraudulent practices. And, you know, the Republicans, they just can't stand the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and neither can Trump's appointee, Mick Mulvaney. In fact, Mick, I don't know if you know this, but he's on the record calling the CFPB. It's a sick and sad joke. What is sick and sad about investigating 650,000 complaints and providing $12 billion in compensation back to Americans who were screwed?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I don't get this. And folks, you know, this is, and they're going to tell you that this is an example of a bloated government agency. Well, it's fake news, because when you've got an agency that's turned $12 billion back to the consumers, I don't think they know WTF is going on at the CFPB, to be honest with you. I don't think that Republicans have taken the time to check it out. And it's sad to me that something that did so much good is now got someone at the helm that thinks that the whole organization is a sick, sad joke. And I want to tell you that most Americans might find this kind of amazing, but Republicans have already, they've already begun killing this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. And here's a story I want you to know about. Credit card companies, we all know, and if you've ever read the fine print that comes with their agreements, they love to sneak in all sorts of clauses into their contracts that settle you, me, and all Americans to settle. They engage you to settle disputes through arbitration. When you read that fine print, and instead of allowing us as consumers to take them to court, the fine print that they put in those credit card agreements always wants you to arbitrate, as opposed to allowing you to take them to court, and actually allowing you to form a class action lawsuit to take them to court. And if you haven't noticed, folks, all Republicans love arbitration clauses. They use them when you begin working someplace. I mean, how many people have had to sign an arbitration clause nowadays? It's almost the rule of the day. When you sit down and you start to work someplace, there's an arbitration clause that you're going to have to sign for the same reason. They use them, like I said, when you begin working someplace.
If you don't, you don't get the job.
That's exactly right. And I think that's sort of, there's something evil about that. If you don't sign here, you're not going to get the job. And you sign your rights away to arbitrate.
How does that apply to something like sexual predation?
Exactly.
In the workplace.
Yeah.
How does that work? Does that mean that a victim of sexual predation cannot sue the company?
Exactly.
So,
well,
I mean,
it
think
means,
about it.
And it does mean that you have to sit down and arbitrate, you know,
how
as
do
opposed
to arbitrate something like that.
Well, exactly. I mean, the idea is to save.
And that's
the,
just one topic.
And the idea is to save the company money. I mean, if you're going
absolutely
to court, I mean, that's how they're doing this, folks. I mean, their arbitration clauses save them money. And if you haven't noticed, your brokerage account, take a look at that.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
you're agreeing to arbitrate in your brokerage account.
If you can understand the language.
Exactly.
That's the other point.
It's all legalese.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they love these arbitration clauses, and the credit card companies were starting to put these in, and the CFPB tried. They tried to ban the credit card companies from forcing you to arbitrate as opposed to going to court with a class action lawsuit, for example. They tried to keep the credit card companies from using these arbitration clauses. You guessed it. The Republicans voted to kill that rule just before it took effect in October. I mean, I don't know how many times we have to say this, but that's what the Republican Party does. They always side on the side of helping the rich and big business before helping the little guy. you know, your pockets, America, evidently aren't as deep as the big business pockets. Big business supports electing Republicans through deep pockets, and evidently you don't have that kind of money. So you're not relevant.
No.
I mean, that's why...
it's very quietly passed.
Exactly.
No fuss was made because the average individual does not really understand the complexity of these laws and rules and regulations that are imposed on companies and what they don't like.
It's amazing. It's the, you know, the...
especially the banking industry.
The Republican Party is just not for the little guy. I mean, it's not. And the examples are all around us. And, you know, we've talked about some troubled Republicans here, Judge Roy Moore, you know, and things like that. You know, I just want to say that there's some other folks out there. Rush Limbaugh is evidently having a cow over something here. And it evidently bubbled up from Breitbart, you know, which is our source for all things truthful. And get a load of this. Twitter users celebrated a nativity scene with recently with two gay Josephs in it. A nativity scene with two gay Josephs. And they're calling this a gay-tivity scene. You know, I think Judge Roy Moore had to be medicated. Rush Limbaugh blew a microphone out of it. Yeah, I mean, just get over this, folks. I mean, all it takes is for one gay couple to set up a so-called gay-tivity scene and the rest of the conservs blow a gasket over this. And, I mean, just give me a break. I mean, I'm sure there's a nativity scene somewhere that some heterosexual has done that would blow a... that they'd blow a gasket over as well. I mean, do we need to look for this stuff, folks? I mean, this is just, you take one tiny little, yeah, who cares? You take one event, and this is how they whip it up, though. I'm telling you, this is how they whip up that fear and that hatred of homosexuals. And this is exactly what Steve Bannon, and how he fans those flames. One story, and heck, you know, this could be his front yard where that gay-tivity scene is set up, for all we know.
Yeah.
And they just, the conservatives love to fan the flames. And, you know, they're not even below, the conservatives are not even below trying to dupe a Washington Post reporter into a fake Judge Roy Moore story about a lady that said she was impregnated by Judge Roy Moore. I mean, this is what they're doing.
Yes,
you heard that. Mm-hmm. And this lady said she was impregnated by Judge Roy Moore. It turned out to be a conservative ploy dreamed up by thieving liars at a project mm-hmm. called Veritas. And, you know, conservatives, they're not as sanctimonious as they want you to think they are. They just aren't. And, folks, we're going to go into something here towards the end of our show. I want you to stay tuned for this. This is called the Artificial Intelligence Apocalypse. I want you to stay right there. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. They luckily they checked it out.
Yeah, we're talking about that story. Luckily they checked it out and they didn't take the bait on that. And again, trying to discredit something like the Washington Post, who, by the way,
what kind of thinking? What kind of person does that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's that a desperate person does that.
Yeah,
I mean,
what is that? Well, I mean, what kind of human being thinks that way? In this country.
Right. And calls himself conservative, calls himself, mm-hmm. you know, the party of the evangelicals. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, like I said, the Republicans, there's nothing sanctimonious about those people. And there was nothing Christian about that. I mean, trying to dupe. I mean, it's dirty. So how about this artificial intelligence stuff here? I've never given it much thought, but I just went from, hey, that's kind of neat, to, man, that is really, really creepy. And it kind of happened overnight like a switch. And on a basic level, when I saw the video of Boston Dynamics, and Boston Dynamics has this new Atlas robot, folks, and the video shows this thing doing flips and jumps over an obstacle course. The reality in my head of these robots being superhuman, I mean, it just hit me. What happened to the wobbly androids from last year, barely able to walk around? And, oh my God, now they're doing backflips with ease? I mean, just to add to this, I think it's creepiness. Elon Musk then tweeted when this video came out, he said, that's nothing. In a few years, that robot will move so fast, you'll need a strobe light to see it.
Sweet, think about that, folks.
Sweet dreams.
Yeah, he calls robots bots.
Yeah. I mean, sweet dreams. I mean, my God, a robot moving so fast that you're going to need a spotlight to see it? I mean, we're talking like 60, 70 miles an hour? Man, that's creepy. I mean, thanks for the creepy nightmares, Elon.
2 seconds from one end of the block to the other.
Yeah, this is like, I mean, this is creepy stuff. I mean, normally you're worried about, you know, like bobcats or coyotes and, you know, things that we can get our head around. But robots now in the mix? Mm-hmm. Now we got to worry about
that. Programmed by human beings.
Yes. And what happens when humans sit down, and we know they all don't have good intentions.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as humans do have a hand in programming these things, you're going to get good bots and some really mean robots. I mean, that's inevitable. And the mean robots have the ability to run lightning fast and hurdle anything. I mean, this is just, this is creepy to me. Just think about that, folks. Elon also adds that we have to regulate artificial intelligence because public risks, and there are public risks to artificial intelligence and these kind of robots, they require public oversight. And, you know, there you go. That's going to be a fight with the Republicans, isn't it? Oversight of artificial intelligence. I can see it coming. Mm. So just to up the ante on this.
We're talking about the United States. Think about what Vladimir Putin will do in his country.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe
just
what the Chinese would do, or the, God forbid, the North Koreans would do.
With this technology. And so just to up the ante on this thing, in kicking off the Russian school year, Putin said, AI power, the power in AI, will lead to world domination. That's what he told students kicking off the Russian school year. And that's kind of scary. So he believes...
Yeah, he's absolutely correct.
Artificial intelligence is going to lead... The one who gets there first is going to lead to world domination. And then here in the States, you've got Mark Cuban, who I respect, saying that if we let China or Russia win this race on artificial intelligence, we're going to be SOL. So the new battleground, folks, the new fight, the new challenge that just bubbled up here is artificial intelligence. You're going to be hearing a lot more about that. And the capability of robots replacing workers could obviously add a whole new dynamic to the cost of, a lower dynamic to the cost of production. So if you can get these robots in there and have a highly capable robot doing the work 24/7 with the unfailing dexterity of a machine, folks... I'm telling you, you know, producing products again in the old U.S. and effectively competing against, say, Chinese companies, who may, by the way, have millions more in cheap labor. If we're first in this race, this will give us an edge never seen before. They might have cheap labor, but if we've got robots that can work 24/7 and we get them done quickly with the kind of dexterity that it takes to do that type of work, that's a whole new dynamic. Or let me just say that it
takes technology to a whole new level.
It does. And that was the whole dynamic that China was able to take advantage of, was the fact that they had this cheap labor. So that's why Walmart is full of products from China. But if we can use robots to produce that stuff, you know, that China has been doing because they've had that advantage of cheap labor, then conceivably our shelves in Walmart, if you will, could be full of products that are made here because our labor is infinitely cheaper. So the country that's first to this technology is going to get the edge, which is what Mark Cuban is obviously alluding to. And it really makes you question Trump's premise of bringing jobs back to the U.S. for U.S. workers, when in reality these jobs will be done far cheaper in the U.S. by robots with amazing dexterity. I mean, do you think that Trump actually gets this? I mean, I understand about bringing jobs back to America, but when the future is really robots doing this work, I mean...
It's more than taxing automobiles that come from Mexico.
Right. I mean, the problem is more severe. He's got a very simplistic approach, and although Yeah, when you bring jobs back, that doesn't hurt. But I think the future of jobs is going to be in robots and in artificial intelligence. And do you think Trump's ever going to get this? Are we dreaming of a 1960 society here, folks, when Trump talks about making America great again? I mean, is that kind of thinking, it's a little dated. Is he just too old-fashioned to wrap his head around artificial intelligence? And how important artificial intelligence is to the future of the United States? Do you think he can really get his head around it? I don't. And we can't even, folks, we can't even prevent hacks to our election system or even a company like Equifax. We can't even prevent those kind of hacks.
He doesn't even understand the complexity of that problem.
No, he doesn't. And that's what's sad. I mean, you take Equifax, one of the most secure companies in the United States, and we can't prevent hacks. And, you know, there's no talk in terms of, you know, the hacks happen, and we just drop the ball, and there is no conversation. I don't think Trump even brought it up. But, you know, how is this president that we have today, folks, going to help us blaze a trail into being superior as a nation in artificial intelligence? I mean, we can't even grasp the severity and drive major change to prevent hacking. I mean, there's no talk about it. They don't get it. These hacks happen, and we move on like it's business as usual. And these people that are hacking us, I think, have got just a reach into just about anything they want. So if we do pull this off as being the lead nation in artificial intelligence, that lack of control over hacking, it could mean that our technology secrets get hacked away by China and Russia. And even North Korea, for that matter.
And think how scary that is.
Yeah, so we've got problems here that we have to fix. It's not a freaking border wall, you know, folks. That's my concern. We need an electronic wall around this nation and the technology that we develop. I mean, when was the last time Russia or China companies were hacked? When was the last time that you saw a news story that said a company in Russia or China was hacked? I mean, they're doing the hacking.
Yeah.
It's a joke. It's all about us.
Because they want our knowledge.
They want our knowledge. So, you know.
And by shutting down U.S. borders, it's not going to help the situation.
It's not.
It's, you're throughout history, America has been the attraction for immigrants, for new thinkers. This is where people, we have the best universities in the world. And now, you know, with our president talking about closing the borders, and those minds are looking at other countries. I mean, they're looking at Canada.
And it's all that knowledge is going away. I mean, the problem
Brazil, because they're open. They're hungry for this knowledge, for these people.
And we're building walls.
And if we build walls, we will scare them away.
And, you know, like we've said, we believe in vetting people when they come in. But, I mean, the problem isn't a young family trying to get here to make their life better for themselves. I mean, it's a major disconnect with this administration. And I just want to stress the point here that we've got to get this hacking under control. We don't need billions in a wall. We need an electronic wall. Because when we start to get this AI technology, and I think that we will be first, but we can't afford to let it drain away to Russia, drain away to China. Folks, we've got to up our game in technology. And, you know, after that Equifax hack of 138 million Americans of our most private information, you know, of 138 million that was hacked, it's like it never happened. And I don't think that was even, like I said, I don't think it was even mentioned by Trump. And what I want you to think is he the right man to lead our nation forward in a way that we are leading our nation forward in artificial intelligence? I mean, think in those terms. And I don't think he is. And I don't say that in a political way. I just don't think that Trump can see beyond tweeting fire and fury and things like the NFL Kaepernick situation. I just don't think that he can see beyond that. To be a visionary in leading the U.S. forward and being dominant in the field of artificial intelligence. I just don't get it. I don't think there's a connection. I don't see it happening. And I guess this is what we can expect, folks, from the oldest president that has ever served in our 241 years as a nation. And it's sad, but you need to think about that, because that's the future. It's artificial intelligence, and you've got every person in technology that knows what the hell they're doing saying, if we're not the first ones to get there, it's going to sink our ship. And I'll tell you, I don't see, unless Donald Trump, you know, rolls over and wakes up and grows up, you know, we're going to have problems being the leader in AI, and it's going to be bad for America. He's got to wake up like yesterday on this stuff. And it's just something to think about for you folks. And well, I do appreciate you being with us today. And, you know, we'll see you again probably in about 12 days. One of us has got a vacation plan.
Oh, well, then it's not me.
He's always on the job, but one of us does have a vacation planned. Maybe I could do a podcast from the lawn of Mar-a-Lago. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh.
Here I am, right in front of Mar-a-Lago.
Mm.
Right. Do you think I'll get any press time with Donald Trump? Do you think I'll maybe, you know, sit around and maybe we can chew on Doritos and eat some well-done steak and chocolate cake together? Discuss.
And don't forget KFC.
Right, yeah, we'll throw a bucket of KFC in there too. And maybe we can just kind of give me a tour of the grounds or something like that. Huh. We'll have to see how it happens. But some stuff to think about there, folks. As always, I do want to thank you for being a part of the show today. And we love that you're with us. And today I want to leave you with a new group here. They've been around. It's kind of a new group. It's called the Seven Handle Circus. They've got a song here. It's an interesting take on an old song here that I think you'll remember. And I want to thank you for taking us on today. And this is Frank and Curtis. We're signing off for now.
Goodbye.
Do it.
And here we are, Seven Handle Circus. You can find them on iTunes. Go and look them up.